Assalamu alaikum, dear viewers. Hello and welcome to another episode of Spotlight Middle East. I am Rahshan Saglam and I will be your host today. The Syrian crisis of the Syrian refugees is growing day by day in Lebanon. State institutions are neither able nor willing to deal with the situation. Yet again, the Lebanese government is busy dealing and trying to fix what the Syrian crisis have caused other than the refugees. And due to the open border policy with Syria, Lebanon has not closed the borders to Syrian refugees. Lebanon is hosting the highest number of Syrian refugees in the region, followed by Turkey and Jordan, while both Turkey and Jordan have opened official refugee camps at the borders with Syria. Lebanon's government has refused to do so. This and a lot more is going to be discussed in our episode today with the expert and who have been on the fields and inside Syria for almost 6 years,
exactly.
The political analyst Pierre Duthien. Hello and welcome.
Hi.
Pierre, you are French.
Yes.
And you were living in Syria for 6 years.
Exactly.
And you were reporting and covering the unrest in Syria. The first question that comes into our minds, what did you see over there on the ground? What's happening in Syria? And how are people in Syria living, like the humanitarian conditions? This is what we are going to focus on in this episode more than the political situation in Syria.
I think you talk now about like refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talk a lot about refugees in Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
in Jordan and in Turkey. But you have a lot of inside refugees in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
That means you have a lot of people, they were living in homes,
mm-hmm.
now they are living in Latakia.
They left their areas to
exactly.
live in other areas.
And,
mm-hmm.
and they move some of them to Damascus.
Mm-hmm.
So it's totally like a drama and a tragedy for
mm-hmm.
a simple reason, because like most of the Syrian people in the past, we talk about before the crisis,
mm-hmm.
they were owning their own apartment,
mm-hmm.
even if it was a small room or whatever, and a small house.
Especially in the villages, they usually build their own places.
Even in the suburbs, because they were
mm-hmm.
building without authorization.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
anyone who can find like a small piece of land,
mm-hmm.
he was doing his own house, and all his family was living with him.
Mm-hmm.
So at this time, they didn't have anything called like a rent to pay. They,
mm-hmm.
don't have renting to pay. Now they have to pay to rent a house,
mm-hmm.
and the price of
they're
renting,
expensive more
it
than
explodes.
It was before the crisis.
It explodes totally.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to know, like in Syria, even before the crisis, Syria was one of the 10th most expensive real estate place in the world, because
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
you can find in Malki and in some
yes.
of the places where are very
those
expensive.
Those are the high price
exactly.
areas. But as well, those refugees are living, or people who were displaced from their areas are living in a little bit cheaper
of
places.
Course.
But still, it is not very cheap, and it's getting crowded, those areas. And those areas are being targeted with the mortar shells and being targeting, like we know, the Jaramana have been hosting a lot of displaced people. And the Jaramana area have been targeted with several explosions and mortar shells. So how is the situation when people that are displaced are in those areas are not safe as well?
They are not safe. And if we talk about the price, we talk about Jeremana.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot find a house there under something like 40,000 Syrian pound.
Mm-hmm.
40,000 Syrian pound, if you make it in dollars, it's something like $300.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to understand, like the average salary in Syria is around 15,000
mm-hmm.
Syrian pound.
So
it's like three
expensive.
Times the average.
Mm-hmm.
So the real crisis they are facing, if we talk about explosion and
mm-hmm.
about the fact like you have car bombs
mm-hmm.
and if you have like terrorist attack and you have rockets sent by the FSA or jihadist or Salafist or
mm-hmm.
whoever they call them, this stuff, you know, every single one in Syria is facing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the refugees, they have to add on all that the fact that they don't have any penny in their pocket and they don't even can find food
mm-hmm.
to eat. So till now, the government is still paying the salary of the people from the government. So
uh-huh.
even if you are not going to work,
mm-hmm.
even if you are living in a rebel area,
mm-hmm.
in an area not controlled by the government,
mm-hmm.
you still get your salary.
Oh,
so your salary is still
good.
Paid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes at the end
but
of the month.
But this is for people who work for the government.
Yes, but you can say like more than the majority, 55%
uh-huh.
were working for the government.
Uh-huh, this
so this is the first point. Second point, you still have some products sponsored, like
mm-hmm.
the bread.
Mm-hmm.
Still at the same price from the beginning of the crisis.
Yeah, I've witnessed that in Syria
yes.
when I was
so
there.
So I think this is the key. So how come like this
so
area?
So the government is trying to help those displaced people.
They're trying
people.
Their best,
mm-hmm.
but they are
mm-hmm.
facing something like
and,
totally.
And we've seen that a lot of displaced people are living in schools, in public
correct.
Schools.
Correct.
Are they still living up till now? Because I've seen them, like I've been into Syria and I've seen them in summer living in those public schools. But now the schools have been opened for a few months.
What they did sometimes when they let people in school,
mm-hmm.
So they took another school
mm-hmm.
and instead of having like kids coming coming from 8 to 2 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
You have some of them coming from 8 to 2.
Oh, so
and
other
of them coming,
shifts.
Yes, two shifts. Mm-hmm. Because this is the only way that they found, just because like you have a lack of school, exactly like you have now in Ersal, in Lebanon.
Yes, in
I
Lebanon.
Went to Ersal like last week.
There are no places for Syrian refugees to study, and those kids need to continue their education.
When you arrive in Ersal, in Lebanon, you have like a sign telling you, like asking Syrian refugees to don't use the electricity for the heater.
Oh.
Because like they are facing, because already Lebanese population have a lack of electricity and have problem electricity.
We already have it in Lebanon.
So
yes.
Plus, if you add something like 1 million to 200,000,
the number is not accurate. And according to the UNHCR, it is more than 1 million. But yet there are a lot of families and a lot of Syrian refugees that are not registered, and
exactly.
This is a big problem, because those that are not registered, they are still in Lebanon and benefiting from everything that is in Lebanon to benefit from.
And you know, small villages in Lebanon, they are facing other problems. Like even if you talk about like something very stupid, but something very important, like the garbage. Like they were not planned to face like having something like 200% more population.
This is another problem that the Lebanese used to suffer from before
exactly.
the Syrian refugees.
Exactly.
So now it is getting more
unreal.
And more worse.
It's getting unreal.
It's disastrous.
If we separate the problem, like you have the refugees from inside, refugees from inside, like in Syria, they are facing the same situation as the rest of Syrian, plus no house. Plus, for most of them, no work, because for the people who are not working for the government,
because they're
the factory have been destroyed, most of the shops are closed, because like now, you know, like a dollar worth something like 45 Syrian pound before the crisis,
so
now it's 150.
There's no way that people would still open their
no
shops.
No problem. It's totally unreal. People are totally suffering. And don't forget that now I met many families. You have like something like 4 or 5 families depending on one salary. Because like there is only one guy working in all the family,
and
so he's helping his brother, his sister.
Him.
So in the past, we have to be honest, his salary was not even enough for his own family. Now he has to face the fact of paying the renting of a house and to even like get food and get some medicine. Just to give you a simple example, there is something like a syrup for the flu called Toplexil. Yeah, before the crisis, you have something like a local one produced, Toplexil. It cost 175
Now the factory is closed.
Exactly.
So no more the local...
Destroyed.
Right. So no more local medicines.
It was in the past 175 Syrian pounds. Today, it cost 1,200 Syrian pounds. So only for a syrup, and you talk for about medicine for kids. And this stuff, it's not like the government...
We're not speaking about cancer medicines.
No.
We're not speaking about diabetes medicines, which usually those sick people need it every day, and they need it continuously. So this is getting worse and worse in Syria.
Sorry to interrupt you. Just to give you an example, this syrup costs 10% of the salary of a normal average employee.
10%.
So how come I met many people, they are running after that small things. And they cannot even afford it. So the government, of course, is doing its best according to the cash they still have, because you don't have to forget that most of the medicine they have, they import it now from Saudi Arabia, from Lebanon. So the government is not going to pay in dollars some expensive medicine that they don't think it's totally necessary. But the problem that when you have a baby who have flu, you need this syrup.
Valerie Amos have been saying that the funds for 2014 is going to be kind of doubled from the funds that were supposed to be paid for the 2013 because of the Syrian crisis. Do you think that those funds for the UN, the 12 billion something, this is the kind of the number, and it's a scary number, because if we look in 2013, it was 8.5 billion. Now it's 12.5 billion. So we have a lot of expenses, and it is all going and due to the Syrian crisis. And Valerie Amos has said that it is going to Syria and neighboring countries, not only Syria, those that are hosting Syrian refugees like Lebanon, Jordan, and Turkey. Do you think that those funds are going to be paid?
I'm very surprised each time I'm listening to that kind of numbers. It's not the first time I'm listening to this number. The fact is, like, till now, I don't understand really, and I read many reports, but there is nothing clear about how this cash is divided, to who this cash is really going. Because I will tell you something, and you have to be totally honest. To be totally honest, in Syria, I saw some shops, they were selling some product food, and it's written behind, like, it's not for sale, it's a gift from UN for Syria people. So the problem is,
so
like...
So the aids are not going for those in need?
I cannot say, like, all the aid, but some part of the aid, at least the one I saw in this shop, and it was, like, a full storage of it. So the problem is, like, you're in a war situation. When you're in a war situation...
Who to blame
I will tell you something. Like, now, in Syria, to be totally honest, there is something called chaos. That means on the ground, no one is responsible. Mm-hmm. Like, if I think they don't have even the control totally on the ground, because the problem.
And of course, the government and the Syrian army is busy trying to solve the conflict and trying.
The Syrian army, like, is doing the main job, but mm-hmm. the problem is like they are using a lot of people beside mm-hmm. who are not like official, mm-hmm. and they just have authorization and they work, mm-hmm. but they need them for the moment. Mm-hmm. So they are not satisfied with them. They don't like them. It's not like they
want to. But they're using them for
but
the moment.
They don't have
just
the choice.
In the crisis.
They don't have the choice. So mm-hmm. you have some people. I will tell you something. If in my district I have a big family mm-hmm. and many kids and I'm someone a little bit strong, mm-hmm. the government will need me just mm-hmm. to make sure that I will make this place mm-hmm. safe mm-hmm. and peaceful. The problem is like I would have some power and some mm-hmm. control on this mm-hmm. area. And who is controlling
me? And the man can take advantage of
this
it.
This is a problem. So mm-hmm. I will tell you something. You know, human being, no one is perfect. Mm-hmm. And you still have people, if you talk about individuals, mm-hmm. doing mistake. The problem is that now when you have a war situation, you know, like some stuff happen and it's complicated to define the responsibility of each other, because mm-hmm. the government is focused on the big stuff, mm-hmm. on trying like to get back some cities and to make like military operation. Mm-hmm. If you talk about security operation on the ground and you can talk about, you know, peacemaker mm-hmm. operation, I don't think like they have total control of it. When I went mm-hmm. on the ground on Homs and even on Aleppo, in Aleppo, I saw like the army and mm-hmm. even the security, you talk about the official security, mm-hmm. is not playing a big role about like maintaining the peace on the ground. Uh-huh. They are trying to get back some area. It's mm-hmm. it's a huge work. But if you talk about like controlling an area on a daily basis, mm-hmm. you cannot let like a complete army like dealing with that. So mm-hmm. you need to have like extra forces, mm-hmm. and these extra forces are the one who are like causing sometimes problems.
Okay, so if we want to speak about numbers, how mm. many people have been displaced? If we want to speak about inside Syria, now how much is the percent for displaced people in
the
Syria?
The last number I heard, it was like when I was at a meeting with the UN, it was around 20% of the population something, mm-hmm. so it's mm-hmm. not like a small numbers. You mm-hmm. talk about a population of 20 million people,
yeah.
So if you talk about 4 million people,
until
now, from the beginning, we talk about official refugees, mm-hmm. but you have a lot of what I'm calling middle-class refugees, mm-hmm. people who are not going to live in a camp, people who are not registering themselves.
People who rented places.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So these people, I will tell you something.
They're not living in schools, they're not living in the Red Cross
exactly.
areas.
Even in Lebanon, you have a lot of them.
Yes, like, we do.
So the fact is like, they are taking the only car they have, mm-hmm. they put all the stuff they have, mm-hmm. they put maybe some cash beside during the 5-6 last years, mm-hmm. so they take all of it, and they come here and they try
not
to start
only the middle else. Class, we have the high class, which
yes.
can afford places in London and a lot of countries, foreign countries, and sometimes they come to Lebanon, they have places in Lebanon, and there is a lot of those examples. There are a lot of Syrians who have enough money to just
exactly.
rent a big place in Lebanon and live freely and live without even working in
it's
Lebanon.
Like, it's like, you know, Brumana, for example. Mm-hmm. You can call it mini Damascus, mm-hmm. because like you have
because
most of
we
the
have
Syrians
a
there.
Lot of Syrians there now.
Because like they were used to have villas in the mm-hmm. past, just mm-hmm. for the summer and to mm-hmm. come like for the weekend. And now
in the Balani area,
exactly,
Balani area,
exactly.
those the areas for
exactly.
As a village, it's like Brumana area
exactly.
in Lebanon. So now, if we were going to speak about the Syrian refugees
okay.
in Lebanon, we have a lot of Syrian refugees in Lebanon. Some are not registered, and some are registered with the UNHCR taking aids. And those living in the camps are living in very bad conditions. You visited Tarsal mm. area, and you visited those camps. Mm. What is the overlook that you've seen over there?
I think I will tell you something. Situation in Lebanon is already complicated for Lebanese people mm-hmm. because, you know, big lack of electricity, mm-hmm. you have problem with the water, you have problem.
We already have our
yes.
own problems.
So,
now
so it's not like they are arriving in Sweden, in
mm-hmm.
a country like everything is perfect, working
mm-hmm.
like easily. So unfortunately, they are facing exactly the same problem that Lebanese people are facing,
mm-hmm.
multiplied by 10, because
mm-hmm.
like they are living not in a real building. In
mm-hmm.
the place I went, it was like a school or something,
mm-hmm.
like an official building.
So there are no bathtubs, no bathrooms, nowhere. No, it's not
you
prepared.
You have, but they try to organize.
It's a school, mm-hmm. it's with classes, it is not rooms, it is not prepared.
No.
But they have public bathrooms to use.
And some of them, they are living under tents, because like you don't have space for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I was surprised by something like Lebanese people, they are so welcoming. Like this stuff, like if you talk about the population, they are so definitely
mm-hmm.
welcoming. But if you talk about like the administration and the organization,
mm-hmm.
I think something bigger than them arrived in this country. Like they are not prepared for that. We talk about now 8 billion, 12 billion dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I swear, if you go to Ersal, you will not see this cash. Like, I didn't see $12 billion or like even
being
$1 billion.
Spent on those kits.
Totally. And I was surprised by something, like some organization from the UN came with clothes, for example. Mm-hmm. And so they come with big cars, you know, these big white trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to throw clothes. Like a mountain of clothes in the middle of the refugees. So
and everyone
comes and take. Without organization, mm-hmm. without anyone saying like who have kids, who have adults, who have teenagers. So they saw it like that.
It is not organized as well.
Exactly, and you start to have like a rush. And I saw like a total unreal scene. Like mm-hmm. I was thinking at the end, like the UN would maybe a little bit organize stuff, mm-hmm. say to people, okay, who have families, like to see.
Who have the age of 3 or age of 4.
At all.
Okay, we are going to speak about the situation in Ersal and camps in Beirut and the whole camps, the Syrian refugee camps in Lebanon. But first we are going to a shorter break and we'll be back. Dear viewers, a break and we will be back. Okay, Pierre Duthien, you were speaking before the break that even the United Nations and UNHCR and those responsible and organizations responsible for the Syrian refugees are not organized enough. What needs to be done so that the Syrian refugees would live in good conditions, like minimum conditions, living conditions?
I think like on the ground, they mm-hmm. need to make a real organization. That mm-hmm. means they need at the end to put the families together to make sure like they have real like shelters for the winter. Mm-hmm. We saw like last week.
Living in tents, and the toddler was killed because his parents were working in the fields. This incident happened in South Lebanon, and I have the article over here, and it is really depressing to see a toddler, 18-month baby, alone in a tent with a heater, with a fuel heater,
right.
And this is really tragic because those young men tried to help him, but he died because of the burn. He didn't die because of the cold, he died because of being
you
burnt.
You see, this example is totally what I saw there. Like, mm-hmm. no organization, mm-hmm. no facilities. Like, there is nothing. So when we talk about like these huge numbers, and I will tell you something, most of the aid they are getting and mm-hmm. most of the support they have, it's from the population themselves. Uh-huh. It's not like even about the government or anything.
This is kind of a humanitarian advice
exactly.
that
it's
people
like
are helping each
other. They
are
neighbors, so mm-hmm. they come. So you have some people of the village, they come, they make some food. Some of them, they give some clothes. Mm-hmm. But it's not fair.
Speaking about this, an organization in Lebanon that is constituted by youth, they have done an kind of campaign to help refugees, Syrian refugees. And they organized this campaign just to collect clothes for Syrian refugees. And a lot of people did help, and some people did get a lot of clothes to help those cold and needy refugees. So this is really nice when you see that citizens, not organizations, no one, just youth are trying to help those refugees. But no matter how much we try, it's still the government still has to do its part, and the United Nations still has to take part
in this. I think the United Nations, especially because they get so involved in mm-hmm. the Syrian crisis, mm-hmm. and they tried so much to have an effect on what's going to happen, and mm-hmm. especially like France, US and the rest. Mm-hmm. So because you want to be involved, guys, so you have to take your part. So at the end of the day, we can talk about sending like radio and sending like weapon to the mm-hmm. opposition, but what about the result of doing all that? So you did all that, it's your mm-hmm. choice, it's a political choice, you have to face this choice now. Mm-hmm. This choice brings this country to have like millions of refugees all over the region.
You're gonna have to help those as
these
well.
People,
just
so
like
okay, so each time they have
articles.
A meeting, they talk about how to get more weapon, how to get more help. Mm-hmm. It's okay, it's a choice, it's not mine, it's a political mm-hmm. choice that they made. The real question you have to ask yourself is like, when you get the result of all that mm-hmm. means millions of refugees, at the end you have to help them. Lebanese government, they are not even able to help correctly their own population, mm-hmm. if you talk about mm-hmm. like social aid, if you talk about like the fact
Lebanese
of
Lebanese people are in need as well,
exactly.
and we have a lot of people needy people.
Exactly, and you
who
know like religious organizations
do not have places to live in, are living in a very bad living conditions, and not to forget that we have the Palestinian refugee camps as well, and they are in bad conditions, and those camps are still hosting other Syrian refugees.
It's unreal. You see, it's unreal.
Add to that, we have the Palestinian refugees who were in Syria, living in camps over there in Syria, and who came to Lebanon and were hosted by those Palestinian refugees, and we're all living now in chaos in Lebanon. Okay, again, the question is, what needs to be done in Lebanon? We spoke about in Syria.
I think we need to see more, like if we talk about now $12 billion, mm-hmm. so $12 billion,
needs
in Ersal, they don't need $1 billion. They mm-hmm. don't I don't even think they need $10 million. Mm-hmm. They need like some organization. And at the end, like I don't know how much costs the fact of making like a proper shelter or mm-hmm. try to organize the water stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. But at the end, it's not normal that today in Ersal, if you talk to many people, officials there, they are alone. Mm-hmm. Like they saw the UN like sometimes coming, mm-hmm. like I told you, sewing clothes, coming to try to get to give some food, giving some rice.
But it's not regularly.
It's not something regular. Mm-hmm. You need to be there on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Like at the end of the day, if we talk about that kind of cash, again, me, I met a lot of UN officials in Syria, mm-hmm. and I met a lot of UN people here. Like if you see about the place they are living and they are renting, who are so expensive, the kind mm-hmm. of cars they have, mm-hmm.
the kind of food they eat.
Kind of meal, the lunch they have, like I never saw them even in Syria getting an invoice under $100, $150 per person. Mm-hmm. So I'm not criticizing. They can live the way they want, but at the end of the day, guys, your main target is to
you
do your work.
You have a mission.
Exactly, and we can say it's a failure. Mm-hmm. And each time I'm listening and hearing like from France and from the rest of the world, like okay, Lebanese government is not doing its part. Okay, at the end of the day, you have like 12 billion budget we're talking about now. Mm-hmm. I don't think like they don't have 12 billion budget in Lebanon for their own population. So how come?
Trust me, we don't. We have a lot of debts in Lebanon.
You see what I mean? So at the end of the day, you have all this cash. Use it. Mm-hmm. Use it properly. Like mm-hmm. when I saw them distributing clothes, I saw a mom. She showed me a shoe, and she told me I don't have the other. Like because everyone was taking. Oh, so they were sewing even shoes like that. It's not a proper way because they're afraid of them, because mm-hmm. they're not able like to try to talk to them to control them. You don't throw stuff to people.
And because those people are not scary, but those people are living in bad conditions, of course. They have the right to be treated the way human beings
Definitely.
Are supposed to be treated.
And again, me, I was so surprised by the fact, like in Ersal, people mm-hmm. are not that rich, and mm-hmm. they are like very like average people.
It is a bad situation
and
in Ersal for Lebanese people as well, living over there, citizens in Ersal.
And they are helping them the best way they can. But mm-hmm. the problem is like, again, they need real experts to come on the ground mm-hmm. to evaluate the needs of everyone, to see what kind of things they can do. And I will tell you something, I would think it would be fair mm-hmm. that the facilities they are going to do for the Syrian refugees, some people of Lebanon, they can get benefits of them. Like mm-hmm. if you try to make a water dispenser there, mm-hmm. why not make for Ersal also? Like I will tell you something, I'm not saying like they just have to
help the whole population.
Yes, of course, because the whole population is facing the problem. Mm-hmm. Like I was meeting a teacher in Ersal, he told me now in my classroom, I have only two Lebanese kids. Most of them, they are Syrians. So it will have an effect. Now you talk in Lebanon. Lebanon is 4 million people, something. Mm-hmm. So you mm-hmm. talk about 20% of the 25% of the population. It's added now. It's unreal. If you talk the situation of France, mm-hmm. it's like having like something like now 20 million people in France.
It is not
coming
normal.
Like in 1 year. Mm-hmm. Like imagine mm-hmm. 60 million 20 people arriving, coming, and having needs. That means mm-hmm. they need to eat, mm-hmm. they need to have electricity, they need to have water. And when you know that you don't even have enough of all that for your own population, mm-hmm. and now you have to face all that more,
it is going to be chaos and disaster.
This is exactly what's happening.
We are going to continue speaking about that, but because we are just speaking about the refugee camps and the situation in Lebanon, we're going to a short report just explaining and shedding the light on what you were just speaking about. A report, dear viewers, by our colleague Farah Hatwe, and we will be back.
Thousands of Syrian refugees living in makeshift camps in Lebanon are facing a winter storm that brought snow, rain and freezing temperatures to the country. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has worked around the clock, partnering in recent days with the Lebanese army to distribute winter supplies, including thermal blankets and money for heaters. But despite the efforts, UNHCR spokeswoman Lisa Abu Khalid said there were concerns for thousands of people living in more than 200 informal camps in central and north Lebanon, especially in northern Ersal, as the temperature over there hovered just above 0 degrees centigrade, and the forecast predicted between 3 and 5 inches, 7.6 and 13 centimeters of snow, and nighttime temperatures of minus 4 degrees. More than 835,000 Syrian refugees are registered in Lebanon, although the real number is thought to total more than 1 million. On the other hand, the flow of Syrian refugees has been raising tensions in Lebanon. Local communities are witnessing socio-economic and security implications. Petty crimes against Lebanon. Crimes against Lebanese citizens are on the rise. Harassment of Syrian workers in Lebanon is growing. Members of the Free Syrian Army are believed to be amongst the refugees in Lebanon. The challenge of the Lebanese government is to balance between its humanitarian responsibilities and manage the political, security and economic risks of the Syrian refugee crisis. The Lebanese government has been partnering with foreign governments as well as international and local organizations to provide shelter, food, healthcare, schooling and other services to displaced Syrians. But not all of them are keeping their promises.
We saw in the report the living conditions of the refugees in Arsal mainly, but we also have refugee camps, and as per the UNHCR, I have this map. We have in Beirut, we have in Mount Lebanon, North Lebanon, Baqa, and South Lebanon. So we have five Syrian refugee camps, official camps for Syrians, not to mention the other Syrian people who are living in rental places. So those camps, and we have like more than 1 million refugees are distributed on five camps. Those camps have no minimum living conditions. And the just like the report said, international and local organizations have said it is going to help. Not only organizations, but also governments have said it is going to help, but nothing up till now. And no one is coordinating with the Lebanese government. And we've seen the Lebanese government suffering from this crisis. What can be done concerning those countries who promised to help Lebanon and did not? Knowing that the situation in Turkey and Jordan is a lot better, but the refugees are coming to Lebanon because of the free border policy. What can be done towards that?
I will tell you something. Syrian refugees are coming in Lebanon because of the free border policy, and because they are free to circulate in the country. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have to forget that in Turkey, they don't have the right to leave the camp, most of them. Mm-hmm. So it's the same in
because
Jordan.
Of the problems that happened.
Exactly. So in Lebanon, first of all, you're totally right. It's easy for them to enter because they don't need anything to enter, no visa, no. And it's coming from a safe area. That means you come from Damascus.
Just to have your identity, you can come into the country.
And second of all, which is really important for them, it's like you don't have to pay a plane ticket. Like if you want to go to Istanbul, from Lebanon, so it's cheap. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, you have the poorest one also because like the one who have
another crisis.
Yes, of course. And the third reason is because they are free to circulate inside the country. Mm-hmm. They are not blocked in a camp.
They can work. They can do whatever to get the extra money.
And this is a huge issue for the Lebanese people. Mm-hmm. That's why you have tension and everything.
And now we have unemployed Lebanese people, and because the Syrians get paid a lot less than the Lebanese citizens.
I was doing an interview with a shop owner, and he told me something very honestly. He told me like I was used to pay my ex-employee something like $700 per month. Mm-hmm. For this price now I get two Syrian workers. And they are working more than him.
And they don't ask for healthcare, don't ask for anything. They just need a minimum salary just to keep on living.
And they agree because they don't have place to sleep, so they agree to sleep in the shop. Mm-hmm. So they can work 24/7. So they are like, if you go in most of the stations, gas station now, some of them they are
you find Syrian people working and they sleeping inside. In the station.
So why you will take a Lebanese guy telling you I have to be at home at 5 or 6 because my wife is waiting for me, asking you for a day off, when you have a Syrian guy for 2 weeks, 3 weeks without going back to Syria, sleeping, working 24/7, not opening his mouth, and whatever you give him to eat, he will be happy and maybe he will say thanks to you. So this is an economic issue. If we talk about France and America and the rest of the world,
Sweden, Australia,
why they are not helping? Because I will tell you something. Me, I think like they don't really care. Like now, you know, it was like so interesting at a certain point.
However, those countries are the ones who created their own.
Exactly. So at the beginning they were so involved because they were thinking like it would be a quick crisis. Mm-hmm. It would be like
a year.
Yeah, exactly.
But now we've been facing 2 years and a half, it's almost 3 years.
It's endless. Mm-hmm. They are facing a crisis in their own countries. Mm-hmm. So they already have cash issues. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they don't have a lot of pressure. Like, who is going to pressure them? Like, Lebanese government don't have the capacity to put the pressure on them for real. Jordanian government
don't have the power.
Either. You have only Turkish. Turkish, you are dealing with them like normally, so without any problem, because they put them in a camp and they are like dealing with them. So technically, they don't have a real pressure about it. And till now, every time you bring the question about the refugees, they bring the political stuff, saying like, you know, at the end of the day, the real responsible is the government. Is okay,
whoever they're pointing fingers.
Whoever, this is exactly what they totally do. Right. You get exactly the point. So whoever is responsible at the end, you have something called a result.
And we have a humanitarian issue now to work on.
And they don't deal with it.
We are going to continue our discussion, but before we're going to take our second break for the episode, our second and last break, and we will be back, dear viewers. Okay, we are back after the break. Pierre Duthon, we were speaking about pointing fingers towards the government, and it is the only responsible, according to those countries that you were speaking about, that the government is responsible for the crisis. However, we know that the political situation is not only measured by who's responsible. It is a chaotic situation in Syria. Foreign countries have created this crisis just to defeat the government and to expel the regime and to defeat the Syrian government. If you want to speak about the situation of the refugees during the crisis and what's going to happen after the crisis, if the crisis ended, and we don't know if it's going to be for the government or for the sake of the government or the armed groups, but if the crisis ended, do you think that those refugees are going to go back to their country, and how? Because the situation is they cannot go back directly and live all there.
It's a real good question, and I think, like, first of all, it will take years before this crisis ends, according to what, because you were also on the ground, so according to what we saw on the ground, it will take years. The problem is not about rebuilding the country, because rebuilding the country, it's about cash. So maybe if every country throws some cash, you can rebuild the country. The problem is to have to rebuild the trust between the communities. Now, I think, like, they don't want to live together. And this is a real issue. Like, they are facing exactly the same situation Lebanon was facing. Like,
in 1975.
People don't want to live with each other.
Until now, Lebanese people do not live together.
Exactly.
We still have this problem.
I came here today. Some of my friends are living in Ashrafieh. They didn't even know, like, there is a church in this area.
So they don't know the areas.
When I told them there is a church here, they were surprised. They were thinking there is no church in this area.
But so by the way, Lebanese people before the 1975 and before the civil war used to live Christians and Muslims together. However, the war was disastrous.
Exactly like in Syria.
Now it's a civil war, and this is what's going to happen. Yeah. The Christians are going to live in their areas, the Alawites and the Sunnis.
So this is the way they divide the country, because it was the point from the beginning, and it worked. So the fact is, like, even the refugees now you have in Ersad, some of them they are coming from Homs, for example, some of them from Dara. If you tell them, like, are you planning to go back? Even if you tell them the situation is 100% safe, they're not planning to go back there, because they are so afraid. You have, like, slaughtering from both sides, because, like, this is a civil war. You know, like, you kill someone of my family, I need to kill someone of your family.
Family,
and it's endless, because, like, revenge, like, it's like an endless process. So this is the way they think. Second of all, you have also people getting married. Like, it's also something really important to understand. Like, you have a lot of Syrian women finding Lebanese husbands, and the same in Jordan.
And this is another crisis, by the way, because underaged and not less than 18 years old, I mean, they are marrying Lebanese people just to so that he spend on her,
exactly.
So that she has a shelter, a safer place to live in.
You can get a wife for something like $1,000. So it says a lot. It's a tragedy, and you can even buy. Something like a kidney, and you can buy something.
This
now
is
they
another
are selling
crisis, a worse crisis.
So this situation creates like an unreal, like.
We've heard about a Syrian guy. I've read this article like a month ago about a Syrian kid. He's 21, and he sold his kidney for $10,000 just to be able to bring food on the table for his family. So this is really
Sorry to interrupt you, in Ersad. A guy told me now there are people coming to ask about eyes. And there's some people, they want to get some eye, one eye. They say, like, you have two, and you talk about $40,000, $50,000. So it's totally unreal. So this is the situation that you have to face now. The problem is like these people, they are going to stay. They are going to stay. They are going to stay a long time. Like I will tell you something. We saw the case in Syria with Armenian people, even in Lebanon. Now they have their own country and like they can go back like easily, but it's too late.
But they're still living here.
They are living here. They, they start to have their own milestone. Some of Syrian people, they are starting to get some small shops. And don't forget like, the cash, they don't even only take the work from Syrian, from Lebanese workers. They already invade the market. Like you have now some small shops, and then because the guy who have some cash beside from Syria, what is
he
going to
do? He opened his own shop and he has his own business now. So, and he rented a place or maybe bought a place. I know a lot of Syrian families that they are my friends who came with, they have their own business. They had their own business in Syria. They came to Lebanon and found that it's a good ground for a business. They initiated their own business, and I don't think that they are going back. Not for the coming 10 years at least.
You're right. You're right. So I'm telling you something. They're going to stay a long time, and if there is no solution in the next 5 years, I think it will be like a total disaster because
knowing
the
that
same
Lebanon is already overpopulated.
Of course, and don't forget something like the same tension that you have in Syria. They are coming here, like because just to tell you some a funny story. Under my building, you have some people like keepers of the building. So some of them are with the government, some of them are against the government.
They have conflicts
every week
among each other.
You have a fight in the street because and we talk about a small place controlled.
This is in the street, and this is between two unarmed people.
And you talk about Ashrafieh, a total government-controlled area with a lot of security at 200 meters from the Sûreté Générale. So you talk Amen al-Am. So you talk about like the safest place in Beirut, you can say. So you can imagine what's going to happen in Ersal in something like 6 months, 10 months.
And what's happening in Tripoli.
Exactly.
We've witnessed
so
it in Tripoli.
So this is the real issue you are going to have, like security-wise. And I'm totally sure the biggest issue that Lebanon is going to face and is already facing is economically speaking. Because don't forget that Syria is the only driving border of
so
Lebanon.
So that the goods from Lebanon goes to the Persian Gulf countries and goes to Turkey.
Who was coming every weekend to buy stuff in Lebanon mostly? Like Saudi people and Khaliji people, they were coming for tourism.
And
because they have every brand there and they have
Persian
all the
Gulf
there.
Countries, they, those citizens, they used to come to Lebanon through Syria to have for tourism in Lebanon.
And don't forget
now,
something.
We don't
like
have tourism.
They have all the brands there. Like Saudi people, they don't come to buy some expensive goods here because they already have their own mall
they
there.
They come to buy Lebanese products.
Exactly.
They come to buy Syrian products.
Exactly.
This is what they do.
Who was coming to buy like some stuff like from Zara and from that kind of brands? Syrian people. Like me, I know a lot of shop owners in Beirut. They are telling you like Khaliji people, they were coming for tourism. But people were coming to make shopping and to buy, especially like you talk middle average price stuff. It was Syrian people. So these people, they totally disappear. So you have a part of the market because of the security reason, Khaliji people are not coming. So people from the Gulf are not coming. So it's becoming a real crisis for the tourism. And don't forget like the main cash coming in Lebanon was from the real estate. Now the real estate is totally stocked and blocked because you have no extra investment. Because people now, they continue to they finish the building because they already
and
started
because,
them.
Of course, because Lebanon is not a safe area anymore because of the Syrian crisis, because of the spillover.
So economically speaking, so you talk about the global economy is affected by the security situation. And if you talk about the workers, they are affected by the fact that Syrian refugees can take their work for $400. So all the process is totally like in a very bad situation. So if this crisis is not ending very fast, I think Lebanon is going to face the most amazing economical crisis ever. We don't talk about security-wise, because security-wise, I think Lebanese people have bad memory of what's happened in the past.
And
so they're going to do their best.
The security situation is not stable in Lebanon anymore. Because of the Syrian crisis, we have booby traps, we have explosions taking place, and of course we have the clashes in Tripoli. This is all due to the Syrian crisis, and the Lebanese government is busy fixing those problems, and it is forgetting about the Syrian refugees and what's happening due to the Syrian refugees being in Lebanon. So how can the Lebanese government control the whole situation in the camps?
I think Lebanese government, this is what I like so much with Lebanese people, especially Lebanese government, they are trying their best. Like, you know, I think they don't have the real capacity and they are not prepared for that kind of stuff.
And like, of course we have political problems in Lebanon, inside Lebanon. We have the problem of the government. We don't have a government right now. We have the problem next month. We're not going to have a president if another president was not elected.
We talk about the big administration stuff.
March 14.
But security-wise, me, I will tell you something. This is a big administration problem. Like, mm-hmm. It's totally like a real like tragedy. Mm-hmm. But the real issue they have is that the security on the ground, mm-hmm. they are not prepared to face people who are like trained with Al-Qaeda and mm-hmm. people like who are real Salafi people, armed groups, who is really like, and don't forget the people you have, if you have like some Salafist people inside, mm-hmm. these people, they were facing a national army there and they are so trained, so prepared. Mm-hmm. So whatever the government now is trying to do to control them, they are not prepared. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you can see the checkpoints, you know, like the kind of checkpoints you mm-hmm. have, you know, mm-hmm. people looking at the car, something like that. You need to have like some special equipment. You need to bring dogs. You mm-hmm. need to check under the car. Say, it's totally another world.
We don't have the equipment, and the Lebanese army is not qualified for this. It was the Syrian crisis came all of a sudden, and Lebanon is not prepared for the refugees. It's not prepared for the explosions. It's not prepared for the clashes in Tripoli. And all of a sudden, the Lebanese army was in big trouble. And we thank the Lebanese army, of course, all the efforts that it is giving, and the Lebanese government is giving a lot of efforts, but still not enough.
As we said at the beginning, even dealing with their own population and mm-hmm. with their own problems was an issue for them. Mm-hmm. So if you had something like 20% more population and very poor population, and don't forget that in Lebanon they were not used to have that huge criminality. Mm-hmm. So now you have to deal with people who are potentially, mm-hmm. because if you have nothing to eat in your place and if your kid is dying, you are going to steal mm-hmm. and maybe doing something else. We talk about people selling their kidney mm-hmm. and thinking about selling their eyes. So tomorrow, why is they not going to kill to get cash also? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm telling you something. So it's not easy to have 20% because the number the UN is giving you, it's a number of people who are really poor. We don't talk mm-hmm. about people living like middle class, mm-hmm. taking an mm-hmm. apartment, trying to survive, getting a job or opening a small shop.
The ones registered with the UNHCR are really poor,
exactly.
in bad conditions.
Exactly.
And they fled from their country just to come to Lebanon to have a safe shelter. Yet again, they didn't find a safe shelter.
And these people, don't forget, they have teenagers. They have kids of 17, 18, mm-hmm. 20, 25. This kid, they are now every day
in the cold,
mm-hmm. and it's really like a problem for the criminality, mm-hmm. because if I am 22 years old, I have no food in my place,
and I'm cold.
There is like 10 centimeters of snow in my house, mm-hmm. and I'm like not even able to sleep because I'm freezing, mm-hmm. I will tell you something, I don't know what's going to happen in my mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know who is going to buy me for some few bucks and mm-hmm. to tell me to do something, I will do it. Mm-hmm. So this is a problem, whatever the values you have, mm-hmm. when you start to be angry, and when you start to be angry also, when you start
and
to
have
be
bad living conditions,
it's
again.
Totally, like it's like like having powder mm-hmm. and trying to throw some matches and to mm-hmm. see if it's going to blow. It's going to blow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we were speaking about the situation mainly in Arsal, and now we know that it is very cold in Arsal, and those people are living in tents. So don't you think that the Lebanese government, it is about time for the Lebanese government to create official camps for the Syrian refugees, just like the ones in Turkey? Like, we also witnessed the problem with the cold and with rain in Jordan, and we've seen the Zaatari camp facing a huge problem when it rained and people were drowning, and the rain came into the camps, the tents. So we have the same issue and same problem in Lebanon, and you cannot live in a tent in this weather. So what can be done? Don't you think that the Lebanese government must do something?
They will not, and it will never happen.
Why
for a simple
not?
Reason, for a political reason. Mm-hmm. Because when you start to build something, you start to create a mini city. You start to create a mini city.
Just like with the refugees,
Palestinian refugees. You see, it's exactly the same.
History repeating itself.
So they are like, okay, if we now remove the tents mm-hmm. and we put something solid, mm-hmm. tomorrow we'll have a city. Mm-hmm. We'll have a Syrian city in Arsal. So, mm-hmm. and these people, they are definitely not going to move. And you will have people saying like, okay, so me, I don't like my plastic shelter. I'm going to remove it and to make it in cement. And the other, we say, like, can I make another one on the top because I have my family to mm-hmm. put? So you start to have building. So when you start to have buildings, when you start to have roads, when you start to have, like, an organization, start to have a city.
It's going to be another city, a city related
so
to the Lebanese government.
So for the Lebanese government, especially with what's happening, it's a way to put pressure on the international community. Mm-hmm. Because if tomorrow they make a real city, people will say, like, okay, there is no issue. You have a real city. They are dealing. Mm-hmm. They are living. So at the end of the day, what you want from us? Letting them in this situation, it's also a way, it's clever, mm-hmm. it's tricky, maybe it's so tough for these people, but at the end it's clever to keep the international community thinking about them.
So just to wrap it up, the situation is we have displaced people inside Syria, we have refugees in Turkey, Jordan and Lebanon living in very bad conditions. The Lebanese government is trying to pressure the international community by those refugees, by making those living live in bad conditions.
Not in bad conditions, but to don't make it for good.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you start to make it, it's not a will to make to put them mm-hmm. in a bad condition, but they are like, if we put them in real cities, like mm-hmm. it will last forever.
It will last forever.
One will mm-hmm. remove them.
So this is the situation, and it is a disastrous situation. We hope that the crisis ends very soon, and those people goes back to their country.
Hopefully.
Because it is not a sane situation now what's happening in Lebanon. And of course, we call from Sahar TV, we call the international community to take firm actions and firm steps towards those refugees that are living in very bad conditions. Pierre Duthien, thank you so much for being in the show. Unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you for the great information.
My pleasure.
And for the information that you've seen on the ground and reported now in this show. For being with us, thank you so much. Dear viewers, our time is up. This show has come to an end, and thank you for watching. We'll be right back.